The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Middleton.
What up, party people?
Live from Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas. What's happening, man? You good?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Kelly Bydlon, everybody. Bydlon, B-Y-D-L-O-N.
Thank you.
For those who are Googling him. On the show today, Kelly, Mark Borchardt on baseball. By the way, Mark Borchardt and I doing a doubleheader after the show today. We are doing our Q3 Baseball Derivatives podcast.
Bang, bang.
Pumped. But Borchardt will join us here on the show, as will John Legesa, because we need instant offense. We need the microwave Vinny Johnson. So we got the next best thing, John Legesa. And Mike Somich will sambo bomb with us a little later on the show. Do you have docu-series fever? Are you pumped for the Circus Survivor documentary that's
pumped,
coming
out? Ready to go. I already watched most of the first episode, though. I'm like ahead.
I did watch the first episode. Did not watch episodes 2 through 5, which we don't have, which are next week.
Right.
We don't get a sneak preview of that. But we did get a sneak preview of episode 1 of Circus Survivor, The Quest for $9.2 million, which is tonight, debuts tonight at VSiN. Five-part docuseries. Quest for $9.2 million, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on VSiN.com and YouTube TV, as well as a live broadcast on X, VSiN.com/Survivor, in case you missed any of those details.
What's it like to see yourself in a documentary? I know this isn't the first one you've ever done, but...
Right, because Wishnev and I and Crack, we were on that Showtime docuseries Action about sports betting. So, I don't know, it's kind of, yeah, once you, well, the first time, you're like, well, do I look like that?
That's going to say, because, like, you know, one of the things we do in radio and TV are called air checks, so we watch ourselves back.
God, who is that guy? That's me.
And your natural reaction for a lot of people when you see yourself on air is, oh, my God, I suck. Like, I suck at this. I suck at this. But, like, a documentary, it's a way different situation.
Well, Kelly, I think the proper answer is it's about the Circus Survivor players. It's about Circa itself. Yes, there are VSiN personalities in it. Stormy is very heavily featured in episode 1. You cannot go wrong with featuring Stormy Bonatoni, our friend. Pamela Maldonado is featured very heavily in there as well. Me and Crack just make a little... We just make a little appearance in there. The way they edited it was great.
I said that last week. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, so great. And Podcast Gil shows up because I curse in there.
Oh, Podcast Gil, watch out.
Yeah, I show up.
Watch your mouth.
My mother is going to be so proud. Gilly, why do you use those words? It's so not nice. So it's fun. So I can't wait. And Stephen Shalansky and James Farah do a great job in the production of this. Circus Survivor, The Quest for $9.2 million again tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. VSiN.com, YouTube TV, live broadcast on X. Which way do you think you'll take it in, Kelly Bydlon?
I just watched the first episode on my computer. So, yeah.
As did I. But I might want to see how a live broadcast on X.
You're right. I will check that out tonight because I would like to see how that works as well.
Okay. So I have been saying now for, a month where I'm like, okay, this is the year to just go crazy in futures in Major League Baseball. My go crazy was I have the Diamondbacks playing the Royals in the World Series at 400-1. You don't have to go with those two. You don't even have to do a matchup, but however you decide to play it, this is the year to take a long shot stab. And I've been saying it's because it is the most wide open I ever remember a baseball season being this deep into a season, meaning that there's no team or teams that are Goliaths, as there usually is going into a postseason or headed in the final stretch of the regular season. Not to say that those two Goliaths are a lock to get to the World Series, but you don't even have that looming specter this year. And then I always quip right after that, Kelly, because I'm a quipper. I always go, watch this be the year the Yankees and Dodgers get to the World
Quit
Series.
Quit quipping.
Yeah, I'll stop quipping. But Jeff Passan from ESPN actually framed this beautifully yesterday via tweet, via the old Twitter machine, which I think crystallizes it even further. And what he does is basically he just looked at the standings and he chops it up a couple ways. One, he starts by saying this is shaping up to be the weirdest baseball season in a decade, which is his way of saying what I've been saying. He says with 6 weeks left, here are the dozen best records in Major League Baseball. So if you're watching at VSiN.com here or on the VSiN app, these are the 12 teams on the left. These are records on the left. These are run differentials on the right. 12 teams on the left. Let's take out the Astros and Braves there, because the 12 go from 73 wins to 66 wins. But if you chop off the Astros and Braves, Kelly, you have 10 teams, a third of Major League Baseball, within 4 wins of each other. 5 losses, by the way. But 10.
Yeah, it's a lot.
A third of Major League Baseball, not a third of the entire league, within 4 wins of each other, from the Phillies down to the Diamondbacks and everyone in between. If you look at run differential, the Yankees are at plus 116, 12 deep, the Braves are plus 50. But again, if you chop off the Braves, you have 11 teams within a 36 run differential of each other. And by the way, again, the Yankees only at plus 116. Further down, by the way, in this tweet from Jeff Passan, he explains what he's getting at by saying this, which is simply that, you know, last year you had a World Series where you had a 90-win team. Here, I'll just read it verbatim. The best team in MLB, he says, is on pace for 95 wins. The last year without a 100-win team was 2014. Famously, Kelly, the last year that the Giants won the 3 of their World Series. So that was the last time a team had fewer than 100 wins as the best team in Major League Baseball. Best team this year on pace for 95. Similarly, the last time the top run differential in baseball was less than plus 231 was 2014, same year.
What was the Yankees right now?
Like fewer than 100, more than, like, there are more than 100 less than that.
Holy crap.
Now, still almost a quarter of the season left, 6 weeks left, but still, right? Because that could get better. But you're way behind
it. 116, that was the highest, right?
As Jeff Passan says, barely half that at the moment is what it is right now. All of which to say, he says, a year after a 90-win wildcard team faced an 86-win wildcard team in the World Series. By the way, I think he's incorrect about that. I think the Diamondbacks won 84. Rangers won 90. I believe the Diamondbacks won 84 last year. The 2024 championship looks as up for grabs as it's been in a long time. Could not agree more, Jeffrey Passan. I assume he's a Jeffrey.
Yeah,
this is what I'm saying. And so from a betting perspective, it is kind of your duty to take a shot at this. Because, and again, it doesn't have to be the Diamondbacks and Royals like me. But we also have this interesting thing where, and I'll ask Mark Borchardt about this, the 12 teams that are in playoff position right now, and I know we're trying to knock the Braves out of the National League, but with the exception of the Braves as the one sort of team that might be, you know, on the bubble, if you will, I kind of think we know the 11 others. So mix and match. There are only 36 possible combinations of World Series participants. 6-6. So now, obviously, it's weighted to the teams that will have a bye, but you know how the baseball postseason has gone also. That hasn't meant much. So yeah. 36 possible combinations. You know, the way I chose to do it is not an exacta. I don't want to lose. Like, if I get the right two teams in the World Series, I don't want to lose it on one team beating the other if I have the opposite.
Yep.
So I just did two teams getting there. So,
yeah, I like that. We probably don't. I probably don't bet that market enough. Like, we like to bet exactas. Exactas.
Exactas will frustrate you.
No, but you're right. It's so annoying when you've got one side and you've only got one of those tickets.
Oh, if you get that far, you don't want to lose on that. So anyway, Jeff Passan, great tweet there, just talking about just how historical. It's not just us. It's not just us being prisoner of the moment. He's noticing it as well. This is just absolutely, to use his word, weird Major League Baseball season. We'll talk more baseball coming up.
You've got 11 teams that are 20-1 or shorter right now to win the World Series. Dodgers plus 360, your short shot. Yankees 5-1. Phillies 6-1. Orioles plus 750.
Do you have Hideki Matsuyama to win the St. Jude?
Of course not, Gil. I just added it up before the show. I've bet the man 6 times in the outright market this year and not hit on either one of the tournaments that he's won. But congratulations to Matt Brown, who did have him on long shots this week for a nice pre-tournament outright. I think I was about a 45-1 shot for him. So
Hideki Matsuyama.
Got a little sweaty.
In case you missed it, his coach, and his caddy got robbed.
This is a saga. You could make a whole mini series about this weekend.
And I don't mean robbed on the golf course. I mean they legitimately, literally got robbed at the airport in London. Coming back from the Olympics, headed to this three tournament arc FedEx Cup, St. Jude being the FedEx St. Jude being the first of those three tournaments. His caddy and his coach had their passports stolen, so they could not make the trip. So Hideki shows up with a new cat. He does make the trip. He has to have a new caddy, a new putter, everything.
The putter part's important. Did you catch that yesterday?
Yes, I did, because he was up four strokes. He ends up going in the drink at 14. He ends up trailing, and at 17, what was that, a 27-footer he hits?
I don't even know how long it was. Yeah, I was on air at the time. I guessed about a 20-footer, but it might have been longer.
I think so. Yeah. And he sinks it.
I'm talking about, so, okay, Hideki Matsuyama, who entered the tournament, I think ranked 134th on strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour. And this was kind of a, like, for me modeling this event, this was kind of a throw out the putting stats. It's one of the easiest places to putt at. So this is where golf stats, you don't put as much weight into putting because you can have these spike putting weeks like Hideki did. And he was by far number one in strokes gained putting through three rounds. I'm watching yesterday morning as I'm prepping for Live Bet Sunday here on VSiN, sitting at home in Golf Channel showing him warm up, talking about how he is using a different putter on the practice putting green than he had used the previous three rounds when he'd had the best putting tournament of his life. And they had a report that he was going to switch putters for the final round. The fill-in caddy, I guess, basically took it out of his hands and was like, no, you're using the one that you've been killing it with all week.
Matsuyama jumps with that win to third in the FedEx Cup standings with two tournaments to play. Scotty and Xander still well ahead, but certainly narrowed the gap. We'll come back. We'll talk a lot about preseason as well. I'll go off on it. Mark Borchardt on the other side. A little baseball, numbers game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the house. He joins us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert. You can follow him at BaseWinner, basewinner.com. Anything where you see BaseWinner, it's this dude. It's Mark Borchardt, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Mark?
Gil, I'm doing good. I'm enjoying this season. It's cool to see kind of the change that goes on. Particularly like a team with the Royals, like, I don't know. I've been kind of an opponent of the Royals, but it looks like they're going to make the playoffs here, Gil.
Yes, they are. Diamondbacks Royals World Series would just be a fabulous day for one of us around here, I will tell you that. Let's talk about that first since you bring it up. More likely to happen. As we look at the Major League Baseball standings right now, and again, you and I, Mark, kind enough to do double duty today. We're doing our baseball derivatives, our Q3 show today, our podcast. What that means is we'll look at first five inning bets. We'll look at umpires. We'll look at first inning stats as well. So we do a deep dive on the beating the book side. But if I go to the standings right now, Guardians, 2-game lead over the Twins, 3-game lead over the Royals. Dodgers, 3-game lead over the Padres, 4-game lead over the Diamondbacks. Who's more likely to gack their division away, Guardians or Dodgers?
Well, the Guardians I have, actually, you know, they've got a lot of good underlying numbers. So I still have them with a 74.5% chance to win that division. I would love the Twins to, because I have a lot of future stuff on the Twins, but the numbers, at least the way that I'm compiling them today, would indicate that the Guardians should be right about minus 291 to win that division. Then we go down to the NL West, rather, and the Dodgers, by my numbers, and I'd love the Dodgers just like personally, but my numbers are only giving them a 68.7% chance to win that division. So that would be minus 219. The Padres actually 30.1%. And what's interesting about the Padres is I do to compile these Monte Carlo ratings. There's a difference as far as offensive run production, runs scored per game, if you will, and runs against per game. And the number one team, as of the way I do my numbers, it could be controversial to some baseball hipsters, are the Padres. 5.07 runs scored per game against 3.54 runs against per game. Number one in baseball, Gil.
Wow. Okay. So the answer to the question, Dodgers slightly more likely from your numbers.
I would
standpoint.
Say, yeah, I would say the Dodgers. I don't know what kind of pricing you can get for that division, Gil. It's weird that, you know, I did over the weekend, Gil, I figured out how to do the seed percentage, you know, what the percentage of seeds. Now I can't find it to bet it. So, like, I wanted to be all smart on your show and do, hey, this has got a 33% chance and I can't find the seeding.
Mark, it's a two-pronged approach when you do the seeding stuff. You do the math, you've done that, and then you have to find the results to be on the show with it. That's a two-pronged approach.
I got it up at DraftKings, if you got the numbers, Mark.
Well, by the way.
I do.
By the way, to win the
talk about Padres? Talk about Padres.
To win the division, let's start there. Padres plus 550, Diamondbacks 10-1. Now you're talking about the seeding,
Kelly?
Yeah, no,
that's Kelly? A good point. 232, 30% is plus 232. So
yeah.
Padres to win that division is a sweet play.
Yeah, what do you want? Number one seed for the National League?
Please.
We got Dodgers minus 120, Phillies plus 160, Brewers 5-1, Padres 13-1, Diamondbacks 22-1.
Okay, so seed number one, San Diego Padres, 15.1% chance, plus 562. So that would be probably my favorite bet there.
All right. Same for the American League? Do you have it?
Yeah. I've got 1-6 for NLAL, so you guys just shout out what you need. Yankees, even money. Orioles, plus 215. Guardians, plus 425. Twins, 11-1. Astros, 30-1. Royals, 35-1. And the Red Sox, 200-1.
Okay, so Cleveland, 29.7% chance, plus 237. So that's a good bet in the American League from a seeding standpoint.
All right. Let's leave it there because otherwise we'll do all 12 of them.
I can keep going, but we might be here a while.
let me ask you about this because we want to get to Mark's picks of the day also. Let me ask you this, Mark. Is this a thing or not a thing? Thing or not a thing? John Morosi, I hope he's the first one. I hope I'm giving the proper person credit. Post-game news in Williamsport regarding Tarek Skubal's workload. AJ Hinch, Tigers manager, said tonight's start, meaning last night, could very well be his last start on regular rest in 2024. Here's the quote from Finch. From Hinch, pardon me. It's important for us to be very aware, which we are, and it's also important for us to watch what he's doing. He's a guy who works tremendously hard, put himself in a real good position. He's an incredible routine, stuck to it. It's not something we really want in the back of his head. We're controlling the things we can control. He continues to go out and dominate, continues to put in good effort between starts. We're giving him extra rest, but he's done the work. You've got to reward players when they've done the work with giving them a chance to compete. Now, that's a big word salad to say.
Yeah, what?
I was going to say, maybe I should have stopped halfway through.
I feel like I had it figured out until the end.
Does he say something at it? So all he's saying is, last one on regular rest. Obviously, preservation of this dude's health is paramount for the Tigers organization, so we get why they would take that position. For bettors, now he didn't say, what he did not say is, didn't say anything about shutting him down. Is that enough, that quote about last on regular rest, to make you worry if you had Skubal Cy Young bets? And if it does, I mean, is the alternative?
Well, it doesn't make me worry because he's got quite a lot of body of work already. He's got 155 innings pitched. I think that the only thing for me, if you're asking me, the guy should win the Cy Young right now, unless somebody else comes up. Like, I'm not seeing it. I mean, Crochet is like close, but he's not going to get it, right? Because he's playing for the White Sox. So I think that he's got enough for me. Now, the question is it enough for the market? And these voters are so, I don't know, recency biased to me.
Huge recency bias. Yeah.
And you saw that with Blake Snell last year. I don't know if people are looking at body of work or get excited towards the end of the year. I don't know what it is, but so maybe there is something there. And then, so you asked, well, who's the next guy? Gosh, you know, maybe Cole Ragans. He's got a really good base winner ERA. I think his WAR's up there at 4.1. So you look at the WAR in American League, you've got Skubal at 4.5 and then Ragans at 4.1. So possibly him. And, you know, the feel good story of the Royals would play into that as well. So, I mean, maybe have no regrets and go ahead and take a shot on Ragans.
Yeah. The reason I bring it up is because, you know, it's our obligation to bring it up. But I don't know that it's a thing. You know, like, you talk about recency bias. It also doesn't take that much to move these markets, right, and to make them look dramatic, as dramatic moves. So Scoobles down to minus 1,100, which is a dip for sure based on this news. But, you know, Burns is 8-1, and everybody else is 35-1 or longer. And I just can't make a – I have a Seth Lugo ticket. I can't make a case for anybody, including Lugo, right? Like, I just can't. So that it doesn't – even if he were to get shut down, which there is no indication that he will be, I just don't know who the alternative is. And you make a case for Reagan's there at 60-1, but, you know, worth
it. Well, that would be my play alternatively. But, you know, yeah. One of the things I'm really pumped up about is I'm looking at the group of five, and I do this on your show before the season.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of whiffs, but I have Scoobal at 9-1 in that group odds, which was plus 447 for group odds. So I'm rooting for Scoobal. So I don't think there's enough there, though, Gil. I would agree with you.
Yeah. Got to bring it up, but I don't know that there's a bettable, you know, result to that. Okay. What did you get today, Mark? What do you have?
You know, speaking of those Royals, I'm going to put them in the first leg of the base winner parlay with your boy, Seth Lugo. So I can root doubly for, because you've got maybe an outside chance for the Cy Young with that guy. But I've got him 38th in baseball by my numbers. But Carson Fulmer, I've got 114th out of 150 pitchers. And then to add to that, this Los Angeles Angels bullpen, and I don't have it up in front of me, but their xFIP to regular ERA disparity since the All-Star break is incredible. I've got them rated 30th, and this includes the White Sox guys, 30th in baseball from a bullpen standpoint, looking at strikeout percentage, walk percentage, and ground ball percentage. So they're worst in baseball. And then offensively, versus the particular split on the road, I have them 27th in baseball. So that's going to be the first leg of the base winner parlay. And then I'm going to tie them in with the Dodgers, go with the Dodger Blue to tonight. I've got Stone rated. I actually have Wu better than Stone in my starting pitcher ratings, but there's a huge gap in this game between the offenses. The Dodgers offense, second in the base winner ratings versus the Seattle offense, 23rd. So you put that in the mixer. I've got about a minus 163 price on that game. And if you put those two in a parlay, Gil, it pays plus 158.
Okay. Wouldn't be an official Mark Borchard segment without a Borchard base winner parlay. There you go. From Mark Borchard. We'll be interesting to see if we get good Lugo tonight. If he has an outstanding performance, wins his 14th game, it'll be interesting to see how the market moves dramatically once again. But I don't think it's a thing. Tarek Skubal, so far, to me, still protected by the words of A.J. Hinch. I don't think it's cause for alarm for Skubal ticket holders. Thank you, Mark. We'll talk to you in about 90 minutes for the podcast.
Sounds good, Gil.
My man. NFL. The disaster that is preseason. Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets, Kelly, at Beating the Book. Oh, before I read the tweets, can I get my tennis plays? I have two segments now.
The show.
I've completely forgotten about this. So, tennis. We have the finals in Cincinnati, both on the men's and the ladies' side today. I am not participating in either. Ladies' side, Sabalenka and Pegula. Slight lean on Jesse, but not enough to play it.
What's the prize money like?
Oh, it's big time. It's Pegula, a 1,000.
Pegula needs it.
Pegula really does. She's really. You're always concerned about Jesse Pegula.
Just look it out, bro.
That's good for her. I think $7.5 billion is what dad is worth.
Yeah. Hey man, you nothing's promised, yeah. Okay?
As opposed to Emma Navarro, where her dad only is worth $1.5 billion.
Yeah, you're right. So, I really gotta switch my concentration over to her. She needs help.
So no play on Sabalenka Pegula. By the way, they got there. Sabalenka beat Swiatek in straights.
Yeah.
Swiatek, who has won 10 1,000s in her career, 6 on hard courts. Sabalenka gets it done. And Pegula, I had Bedosa yesterday. I had 53 cents of CLV gone. Doesn't matter.
Ugh.
Pegula beats her.
You know what? You actually, I did the old check the VSiN Pro Picks. I saw that old Gil and Zach were on Bedosa. I was like, I'm gonna bet this. And I saw the number, and I was like, this has got nearly the same number that these guys got. So I stayed away because of that.
Well, so today it's the tournaments. We drop down now. This is not big tournaments, but we have a. Men's side is in Winston-Salem. Oh, you know the big Winston-Salem tournament, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And then the ladies are in Cleveland. That's a 250. I got five total plays today. One in Winston-Salem. I'm on Jaume Munar, plus 103 against David Goffin. Again, all these at VSiN.com/picks. Every host, every guest, every sport, everything we have bet is up at VSiN.com/picks. And I put my tennis in the night before. Munar, you can still bet it right around that price, plus 103 over David Goffin. And then on the ladies' side.
How do you say that first name?
Jaume Munar.
Okay. I thought you sent these to me purposely screwing with me today.
Oh, we're supposed to let you pronounce them for
I have no idea. Like, what do we got at the top? Antroxa Rus?
Where? What are you even looking? Oh, the second one? Yeah. Antroxa Arantxa Rus.
Sure.
Antroxa.
There's an X in there.
Oh, my God. Okay. I'll just read these. You could start with reading them tomorrow. Antroxa. Let's see. Dion Parry, plus 153 over Anastasia Potapova. Parry right now. Look, by the way, it's spelled Diane Parry. If you're
Diane Parry. Yeah, that's right. I can always help with that.
She's French.
If for Steve Fezzik out there, this is women's tennis at the time.
This is women's tennis. That's right. He wants to know.
He would like
just
to know
tell me if they're men
back.
Or women, Gil. She's plus 139 now. I would still play her, but don't let her get lower than that. But we got her at plus 153 last night. Lucia Bronzetti's minus 120 over Arantxa Rus. But Bronzetti's about minus 131. Don't let it get higher than that. That was my teetering on the edge of playable. Katie Valenets, you absolutely cannot play. She was minus 102 when I got her last night against Sophia Kennan. She's minus 147.
Whoa!
Now. Yeah, but 45 cents of CLV. You know how this goes.
Man.
After the Badosa thing yesterday. And then Martina Trevisan, you can absolutely play. She's right around the price. Minus 102 over Christina Buxa. So, Parry, Bronzetti, Trevisan. I cannot recommend you play Valenets anymore on the ladies' side. And then Munar on the men's side. Okay, we get tweets. At
Martina Trevisan's kind of a badass name. I like that one.
She kind of that, too.
Okay.
Real life,
yeah. Cool.
Sloan Stephens, not a fan of Martina Trevisan.
Really?
Yeah, she was once asked about her in a press conference. She goes, not my favorite.
Oh,
she even,
God,
went, she even went back to the mic. She goes, Trevisan, not my favorite.
We got to rank at some point all-time best/worst beefs in
tennis
sports.
Beefs.
Like tennis and golf beefs are so hilariously up there. Like, I'm so in for that.
Rat City, just checking on if we're taking the overs again in week three. I'll get to that momentarily. Bruce Dobigan, my mom has been gone for a few years, so I'm living vicariously through your mother, Keely. Thank you, Bruce. My condolences about your mother. Chris Heath, before I went to see the Giants A's yesterday, I took San Francisco to win the pennant at 50-1. I have them pre-flop at about half that to win the pennant, at that price to win the World Series. Hoops by Hoots, following the betting blank in NFL overs this week, went about as well as asking my wife if I can golf both days of the weekend the week after a newborn arrived. Trust the glove. Do you know where I can bet the starter for Pittsburgh?
Yeah, FanDuel's added up.
FanDuel's got ruled.
Yeah, we've got Russell Wilson. I think it's like minus 530.
Jesse Welch. Oh, Russell Wilson is minus 530. Okay, we got to get in all this. Jesse Welch. This documentary features podcast Gilly swearing like a sailor. Oh, blank. Yeah, I'm in. He didn't say blank. Okay. And we'll get to more here momentarily. Let's talk some football. The reason that I said disaster that is on the way into the break was I'm just talking about the macro things we've talked. So heading into week one of the preseason, remember there was the three-team 10-point teaser thing that we talked about that worked so well last year. It was the only thing I did in preseason. I was like, all right, we're going to do the three-team 10-point teaser thing. Didn't work at all, right, week one of preseason. This is...
Yeah, I haven't even really attempted much of those, though, because there are few shops even offering.
It was just a week one thing, and very few shops offered it. You're right. But just this is from Dave Tooley. Through week two of the preseason, unders 26-6, underdog 17-4 straight up, and 20-11 against the spread. Let's focus on that unders, 26-6. And then we had Steve Fezzik come in here on the show, and Stevie is, you know, big brain, smart guy. But Stevie did a couple things that... fell flat on the face, right? One was he went crazy on the overs Monday. He moved the markets with his over bets, right?
Several points on most of them.
26-6 to the under in 2 weeks. So those didn't work out at all. And then he did the thing which I caution against. I said, now that it's not a four-week preseason, it's only a three-week preseason, right? The whole Dr. Bob play a team coming off a loss versus a team coming off a win. It doesn't really apply anymore, and I know he wanted to make it apply to week two the 3 week arc, I should say, and it's just not the same anymore because, from a non-betting standpoint, by the way, I just feel like the preseason is watered down we don't get the same kind of meat to being able to evaluate. We don't get the players aren't playing as much. There are certain teams that just punt on players entirely. Like Bryce Young still hasn't played in Carolina. Like that would have never happened in past years. It's just a different way that they play preseason. Whether it's associated with it going from four games to three games, we can debate. But it's definitely the case. It's played differently now. And then from a betting standpoint, it's just these macro things that Stevie was talking about, they don't work anymore. And Bob would be the first person to tell you not to play it that way, a team that came off a loss to beat a team that came off the win. So I just think from a viewing standpoint, I don't think it's as good of a product. It was never a great product to begin with, NFL preseason. I don't think it's as good. And from a betting standpoint, unless you're doing single games and you're picking your spots, by the way, that situation, in case you were wondering, the losing teams against the winning teams, I think it was 1-4. It might have been 2-3 based on where you got the number. That's the other thing. These numbers move so quickly that in order to spend your time content-wise talking about it, it's a lot of whistling in the wind about numbers that are flying around. So, by the way, a lot of middles would hit if you're able to play that game. So, anyway, you did well, though. You played a couple games.
I'm 5-0 so far the preseason. This was the.
But you've done none of that macro stuff.
Not really any of that. I will say though, like I played one of the overs Fezzik brought up last week. That was the Giants Texans one.
I played that too, and that luckily hit. That's right.
Like I had a couple bets on the Broncos yesterday. That was actually kind of easy. Easy winner on that one yesterday. And then I had two from week one. So, yeah, 5-0 preseason. I think after that, watching that Broncos game. Watching that Broncos game last night, Gil, and counting how much money I lost in golf, there couldn't have been might as well have been a guy with two signal flares outside my window just being like, time to change seasons. Football's here. Golf's done.
Will you even place one bet for week three?
Probably not. I don't know. I just read through the lines right now. I mean, we can go through some of these, but there's not much jumping out to me. I think at this point, I mean, a lot of what I've been going off of, too, is just – it's kind of my old – it's just the old school, what's the quarterback depth chart look like versus what the other team's doing, and especially based off of news. Like, you know, yesterday, we knew Denver was going to run through all those quarterbacks, and you knew Green Bay wasn't going to play any of their starters.
Let's talk about that Pittsburgh thing for a second that the gentleman asked about.
Yeah. Yeah, this is up. I saw it at FanDuel has it up.
Russell Wilson was 8 of 10 for 47 yards, sacked 3 times. Justin Fields, 11 of 17 for 92, sacked once, 8 carries for 42 yards. He did fumble once, but they did recover. In Buffalo's 9-3 win over Pittsburgh. Russell Wilson, to start week one, is minus 520. Justin Fields is plus 350. Let me ask you something. If you're the Steelers and you see this, I get it. Just by the way, there's also tape of Justin Fields. There's a man wide open. I mean, he's got a man wide open downfield. He never sees him. So it's like the same vintage, if you will, Justin Fields. So don't be like too seduced by his stats being a little better than Russell Wilson's. But if you are the Steelers, if you're Mike Tomlin, don't you want it? Like, at least Justin Fields is young and you can convince yourself that maybe there's something in the future. Don't you start Justin Fields? Or are you like, well, I guess this is your last days, Russell Wilson, and we did sign you, so I guess we got to start you here.
Yeah.
The last?
I think I'm in the latter still. It's still Russell Wilson, man. The guy still won a Super Bowl. I know it's been trash for the last couple of years, but you brought him in here. You got to figure out what you got first.
The logic of the former, that you should go with a younger person, I believe in. But I think the latter, that they're going to start Russell Wilson, is actually what's going to happen. More football on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you ready to up your game this football season? Dive into the action with Visa's college and NFL betting guides, whether you're gearing up for college matchups or the NFL grind. Our expert insights, stats, and predictions are your ultimate playbook for success. For just $175, you can score Visa Pro access until the Super Bowl. That's right, all the tools, trends, and tips you need to crush your bets and stay ahead of the curve available until the big game. Don't miss out on this winning opportunity. Head over to Visa.com/subscribe now to score your Visa Pro access. That's Visa.com/subscribe. Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. We were talking, by the way, we get tweets. Let me just read this one here. This is from Uncertified Boogeyman. Love the unbiased take on the Scooble stuff, despite holding a ticket on a guy in the race, quote-unquote, unlike others, trying to make cases for undeserving candidates. Props, Gil. Great stuff, as always. Signed, Tarek Scooble, ticket holder. Tony Farmer, with the release of the Survivor documentary tonight, I'm curious if you decided on how many entries you'll have this year and where you might be leaning for week one. I don't know about week one yet, Tony, but probably 1 million and five survivors, just like I did last year, I'm thinking.
I did start to think yesterday that I'm like, I felt like on Friday or something, I'm like, man, I'm getting a lot of questions about what I'm doing week one. And then you're like, all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, it's only just a few weeks away. Those are,
it's only a few weeks.
Those
away.
Are valid questions
again,
at this point.
The
yeah.
awkward week off after this week, but then we'll be into it. By the way, I am ready. I'm ready for the hamster on the wheel. Let's get there already. Back to the whole Russell Wilson and, Russell Wilson versus Justin Fields thing. Let's contrast that with the Raiders for a second. So the Raiders, by the way, they played the Raiders played the Cowboys. Cowboys crushed them 27-12. Trey Lance was actually the star of the game. Trey Lance, 15 of 23 for 151, 7 carries for 34 yards and a touch for Dallas, which we'll get to here momentarily. But let's talk about the Raiders for a second. So the Raiders, O'Connell, Aiden O'Connell goes 14 of 20 for 96. Minshew goes 10 of 21 for 95. Antonio Pierce said, I'm going to decide on this after the game. You probably were correct in your hunch. They probably had already decided. He decides to go with Minshew. So Gardner Minshew is going to be, according to Antonio Pierce, the Raiders game one starter. I think that's the correct decision for the Raiders, but not for necessarily the reasons you're here. Because a lot of you'll hear, because a lot of people are like, well, Minshew, he's played, you know, he's more games under his belt. You know, he's managed to find, you know, action everywhere he's been. Now on his fourth team. So was it Jaguars, Eagles, Colts, and now Raiders. And the dude just gets playing time no matter what. He finagles into a situation, and here he is the week one starter. I think it's the correct move for the Raiders because if Minshew fails, you can then go to the kid, and it's still a great thing for the kid's confidence. I think if you start with O'Connell and he falters, and then you have to bring in Minshew, I think it has a detrimental effect, an outsized, disproportionate effect on the young kid's confidence. So I think this is how you play it if you're the Raiders.
I'll back it up with another reason, I think. Because if you go O'Connell first, and then he falters like you're talking about, and you want to bring in Minshew, Minshew's going to screw around and win you a game or two that you don't want to win at that point.
that's another great.
Yeah, so that's I have no faith personally in Aiden O'Connell. So, like, I think you run Minshew out there to start the season, see if he can actually do anything.
And Minshew
does give you
the better chance to win football games.
Absolutely.
So I think it's the absolute right choice for the Raiders. Back to the Steelers. I think you've almost painted yourself into a corner and kind of have to go with Wilson, even though the correct way to go is to go with Fields.
I think they go with Wilson. I do think that we like to laugh about Mike Tomlin and the Steelers sometimes on this show, but like, let's be real. Mike Tomlin, I think, is one of the more powerful head coaches in the NFL. I think most teams, this would be no-brainer, it's Russell Wilson. Like, they feel the pressure too much that they brought him in.
Oh, you think he might not feel it?
I think Mike Tomlin has enough power that if he really says it's Fields is the better guy, that we could actually see him. I still don't think that's what's going to happen, though.
are you betting plus 350
or not? No, I wouldn't.
No.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
I think it's still likely Russell Wilson.
By the way, as far as some the other rookie quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels, 10 of 12 for 78. So he followed up a great first game with a solid second game. Caleb Williams, first action, 6 of 13 for 75, but he did score on a 7-yard touchdown run.
That one drive, man, I caught all of that. He looked damn good.
You watching Hard Knocks, by the way?
The one that keeps driving me nuts about Caleb Williams. Drove me nuts before the draft, and it's driving me nuts after you saw the one crazy throw where he rolls out to his left, throws across his body, Rome catches it. I love this analysis. It's he plays too much like Patrick Mahomes. I still don't understand how that's a knock, Gil.
Well,
like everybody's worried about what he can do inside the pocket. God forbid he rolls out and makes a throw that like two other guys in the league could make right now.
His best passes on Hard Knocks are also him awkwardly, you know, like sprinting to his left across his body, beautiful, on a dime.
Whatever gets the job done, man.
Right. Well, okay, we'll see, right? He's certainly a confident kid, and you know, we should bring up our Merrill Hodge footage of Merrill Hodge on our show saying he's nothing special. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But anyway, Bears and Skins have to be happy. Drake May finally got in for more than three plays, right? He was 6 of 11 for 47. He did score on the ground as well in a 14-13 loss.
Thought he looked pretty good
Eagles.
Again.
He did fumble, though. They did recover their own fumble. Bo Nix, though, 8 of 9 for 80. It looks like Bo Nix is going to be the Broncos starter.
Yeah, I think at this point, yeah, for sure.
And by the way, Marvin Harrison Jr. getting off quarterbacks for a second, he didn't play after only having like three, not even a target, or he had three targets the first game. Like, so he's barely had any action. Michael Penix didn't play. Like, the Falcons are like, we've seen enough. He didn't play at all.
See, this is where I was complaining to you about the schedule off air, and then we complained about
the schedule's terrible.
What are
they
doing with this
that.
Preseason? I watched almost everything Thursday, everything Sunday, and like whatever was on NFL Network for most of the day on Saturday, but they had, you know, there was 12 other games I missed.
We have gone a whole offseason. I should have added the schedule being a part of why the preseason stinks also. That was just a terrible schedule this past weekend.
We need someone, if we're going to waste taxpayer dollars on sports sometimes, I need someone in government in charge of all sports scheduling.
Can we get to the Cowboys for a second? You and I have joked all throughout the offseason about how ESPN, the screens are on behind you. Their default on everything is, let's talk about the Cowboys. Let's talk about Dak's contract.
Yep.
Stuff we're not, it doesn't apply to betting. Dak's contract doesn't. But I do want it for two moments.
We've each had this moment. Yeah. Because we laugh about it, and then we're like, but actually, there's a thing here.
2 minutes, can we talk about the Cowboys, sports talk radio? Because, and the Trey Lance thing sort of triggered in my head. Not that I think Trey Lance is necessarily the answer. But it did spark in my head. I'm like, okay, Jerry, not paying anybody. Dak is like, Dak has all this leverage. You know my whole thing, though. Unless you're a rookie quarterback overperforming, right, and you can pay everybody else, or unless you're a Hall of Famer, those are the only ways you're winning the Super Bowl. Dak ain't either of those two things, okay? The question becomes, if you're Jerry Jones, how do you play this? And I think the optimal way that you should play it, if Jerry Jones wasn't about to be 82 years old, would be, after this year, you actually do trade Dak to, like, the Raiders, right, who would, like, happily take Dak, and all the Raiders fans would go nuts, and they'd think they're going to win the Super Bowl. You know how that goes, right? And then you would start, not with Trey Lance necessarily, but you would try to figure out a rookie quarterback to draft that you were high on. And maybe it ends up being Trey, but the point being is the optimal way is you trade Dak, you figure out a way to get a rookie quarterback that you like, then you do secure Parsons, you do secure CeeDee Lamb, you do build the team around this low-paid quarterback, and that is your closest path. You're the Dallas Cowboys. I hope Dave Ross is listening. That is your closest way, your most direct path to winning a Super Bowl. But because he's 82 years old, talking about Jerry Jones, he's about to be 82 years old, there is no chance he has the stomach for this, right? There's no chance he's going to have the onions, knowing that he desperately wants to win a Super Bowl, to see that through. He's just going to default to, no, we're just going to pay Dak, and we're just going to run this back time and time again. And so I thought the Trey Lance performance was interesting because it brought that to mind, and I'm just like, they're just going to be in purgatory with this. They're just going to be that team.
See, what would have been – I agree. I think what would have been interesting is if they were – and I don't think they ever would have been willing to do this, but if they had gotten involved with, like, the Justin Fields move, you know, it's like, hey – Chicago, can we trade you Dak Prescott for Justin Fields? And obviously they were, I mean, this is, takes Caleb Williams out of the situation, but you're still looking for someone on a cheaper deal, right, that you could bring in, at least keep the team competitive, while then you build for the future.
All right, we had to get 2 minutes of Cowboys talk out of the way. We did a little sports talk radio on them. Anyway, from a betting standpoint, I still don't think they're winning the division necessarily, even though I'm down on the Eagles. I still think the Eagles eke it out. And I don't think the Cowboys are going to win a Super Bowl as currently constituted. I just don't.
I think it's interesting. I keep thinking about your – I mean, you always say with the quarterbacks, the rookie deal or a Super Bowl or a Hall of Fame-level quarterback. It's so true. And it's just like you think about some of these guys that are about to get paid and then power rank where the quarterbacks are at in the league. Like, where do you have Dak Prescott at in the league?
We should do that one of these days.
Yeah, we should. I mean, 10-ish?
10-ish. That's the thing, right? Goff, Cousins, all these guys getting these deals. We'll come back. John Legesa joins us next.